My guest today is Robert Gulrich, author of A Reliable Wife, a book that was a number one New York Times bestseller. Robert was born in a small town in Virginia where, according to him, the chief preoccupations were drinking bourbon and telling complex anecdotes about people who lived down the road or stories of ancestors who had died 100 years before. After living in Europe, he moved to New York and worked in advertising. In his early 50s, he moved back to Virginia to tell complex anecdotes about the living and the dead. Robert's newest book is entitled Heading Out to Wonderful, and there's a wonderful passage in the book that explains the title. When you're young and you head out to Wonderful, everything is fresh and bright as a brand new penny. But before you get to Wonderful, you're going to have to pass through All Right. And when you get to All Right, stop and take a good look, because that may be as far as you're ever going to get. Welcome, Robert. Thanks so much for stopping by the Book Report today.
Thank you for having me.
Heading Out to Wonderful, you've said, is based on a true story told to you by a friend who said it had happened to him. Was this Sam Hazlitt in the book?
Yes. My friend was Sam as a little boy in the book.
But it didn't happen in Virginia? It's just where you said it?
No, it happened in Greece a long time ago. It happened in about the period that I set the book, 1948. And my friend was then a little boy, the son of a butcher. And he met a very charismatic young butcher who came to work for his father. And the story unfolded from there.
Instead of a quick overview of the book, I'd like you to say a sentence or two about each of your main characters.
The main character is Charlie Beale, who is a post-war drifter who arrives in a small town of Virginia called Brownsburg, Virginia, in 1948. He's got two suitcases with him. One is filled with all of his clothes and a set of butcher knives, since he's a butcher, and the other one is filled with money. And Charlie is obsessed with finding two things. One is he's obsessed with finding a place to call home, and the second is he's obsessed with finding a woman to call his own. Sylvan Beale, who turns out to be the woman he chooses to call his own, is a very unschooled young country girl from the middle of nowhere in Virginia. She has created herself entirely out of a fantasy that she has, that she got from going to the movies. She adores the movies, and she loves movie stars. And she follows their lives very closely. And in the way she dresses, in the way she moves, and even in the accent in which she speaks, she pretends to be a movie star. And Charlie sees in her the movie star that she believes herself to be. And she sees in Charlie the movie stars that she sees on the screen, particularly Montgomery Clift, whom she thinks he looks like. Sam is a little 5-year-old boy who works for the butcher whom Charlie works for. And he becomes a kind of go-between in the love affair that develops between Sylvan and Charlie. And he is the character he narrates the story. And he's the character who touches me the most, because it's his sense of childhood and his sense of innocence that is forever altered and changed and shattered by witnessing what he witnesses in the relationship between Charlie and Sylvan.
One thing I kind of loved is that, as you wrote, Charlie shows up with one suitcase full of money, but you never kind of let the readers know how he came on that money.
I think I have to write another book about how Charlie got the money.
I wanted to know. All right, and what about one of my favorite characters, as evil as he was, Bodie Glass?
Bodie Glass is the richest man in town, also one of the fattest, and he has gone out into the country. He is desperate for a wife, and so he's gone out into the country and found a very poor country family and literally bought their daughter Sylvan for $3,000 and a tractor. So she becomes his wife and his possession. She becomes his property, and it's partially her struggle to be a person as opposed to a piece of property that drives her through the book.
I loved Claudie Wiley. You want to talk a little about her?
Claudie Wiley is my way of talking about race relations in the South in my childhood. I think that anybody who grew up in the South is ruled by kind of leftover guilt about the way black people and African Americans were treated in the beginning of the 1950s. And we're all trying to find some way to expiate our guilt over the way race relations developed during our childhoods, even though we were innocent about them and we sort of took them for granted. Claudie Wiley is a middle-aged woman who happens to be a middle-aged African-American woman who happens to be a brilliant seamstress. And she is the one who makes the clothes for Sylvan to give Sylvan the appearance of a movie star. She is truly a genius in the book and can sew anything, it says, from a picture. So Claudie needs her. Claudie needs Sylvan because she's the perfect model for her genius. And Sylvan needs Claudie because she's the way to achieve the vision that she has of herself.
You were born and raised in the Shenandoah, where this story is set. Does that kind of familiarity with the place simplify the writing for you?
Heading Out to Wonderful is in many ways my love letter to the place where I grew up and also to the time in which I grew up. The landscape of the valley is very much a sort of extra character in the book, and it's Charlie's love of the landscape that leads him to his love of Sylvan and his dependency on her, both her and the land. I think the Shenandoah Valley is the most beautiful place in the world. I've been in many, many places, and I have not seen a place that's more beautiful than the Shenandoah Valley, and this book is in a lot of ways my love letter to that place.
Sam, the little boy, is taken along on the Wednesday afternoon rendezvous between Charlie and Sylvan. And as I was reading it, I almost felt like Sam was the big victim in this book. I mean, so much happened to him that tarnished his young life. Talk about that.
So much of what I write about has to do with childhood and the way childhood, I always say childhood is the most dangerous place in the world to live. And if we had to live there very long, we wouldn't live very long. Sam is greatly damaged by the person he loves the most. He worships Charlie, and Charlie loves him. But Charlie inadvertently does him the damage that ends his childhood forever. At the end of the book, Sam is an old man who lives not in his own house, not in his parents' house. He lives in Charlie's house. And in Charlie's house, it says, nothing has ever been changed. He lives in a way, he is a prisoner of his own childhood. And that childhood, the tenor and tone of that childhood, was created entirely by Charlie, whom he adored.
You're starting your book tour now in the South, and then you're heading up north and actually across the country. Do Southern audiences respond more to this book or differently than others?
I think Southern people will feel more closely attuned. There's a great deal of music in the book, for instance, and it's the music that we in the South all grew up with, bluegrass music. And it's not the country music of today. It's the bluegrass music of the early 1900s that existed still when I was growing up. So I think there's that part of it. And I think also that Southerners are very proud of the land they grew up on. And I think they will identify very strongly with Charlie's feelings about the land and the people who work the land.
What's next for you?
I'm writing a novel now that is set in 1969, so I'm sort of slowly moving up through the decades. I was 21 in 1969. And in 1969, two extraordinary things happened that summer. On August the 15th, the Manson murders occurred. And 4 days later, on August the 19th, the Festival of Woodstock began. So I'm writing a novel about the convergence of those two events in the culture and about how, in my exact generation, the brightest thing and the darkest thing that ever happened to us happened in the same week.
Why is your dog named Preacher?
I'm getting another dog named Judge, so I'll have a preacher and a judge. My dog was named after a character in a Clint Eastwood movie, and that's how he got his name. And he looks like a preacher. He just looked like a preacher when I saw him.
I loved reading the book, and there were so many literary images. It's every page has something great. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, and I hope a lot of people enjoy the book.